Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know the slogan for the show. If there's power in numbers, then the positive change purchasing cooperative LLC captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for renewable energy projects, both companies and projects, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African and African-American owned renewable energy companies to address the effects of higher energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities. Also to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under- and underemployment of young African and African-American men and women locally and nationally. Also to educate the African and African-American communities locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. This show is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Also, we are streaming via Facebook, Twitter, and link over the and being broadcast in over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are streaming right now with Facebook, Twitter, and link. This show is also brought to you every week by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, and you can get more information on that organization, which is a 501c3 public policy advocacy organization dedicated to trying to increase market share also for African-American and African-American and African-American-based firms. Now, ladies and gentlemen, today is a very, very historic day in terms of this show and this platform and this particular episode. I have the privilege of having on my timeline someone who I consider as a very principled, a very caring, and a very dear friend, Mr. Ted Trabue, who I've known for a number of years. You can get more information on his background by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Please click on our news and events tab, and you will see a subject titled Conversations with Ted Trabue. And at the top of the hour at 12 o'clock, we'll be bringing on Mrs. Anna Schoolman. And I've entitled this show, Powerful Forces Behind the Solar for All Washington, D.C. Project, which was a pilot program which was launched here. And we have the privilege of having the person who came up with this and initiated this on the live line. Ted, welcome to the airways of Soul and Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Ron, thank you.
Ted, could you speak up a little louder? Your voice is coming in very, very low. I want to make sure we're picking you up clearly.
Can you hear me better now, Ron?
Yes, much better, much better. Yeah, go right ahead. Yeah,
okay.
Go right ahead, Ted.
Ron, thank you again for having me on your show this morning. It's a pleasure to hear you and to be with you this morning to talk about solar in our community and how we are helping our local residents and businesses, quite frankly, move in a positive direction.
Well, Ted, I mean, this has been a long journey, and I've been on this journey somewhat, observing you from a distance when you were the director over DCSEU. And for our listening audience, DCSEU stands for the DC Sustainable Energy Utility. You were managing director there for a number of years. But I think about 11 years ago, Ted, you, Mr. Mark Davis at WDC Solar, and NFL Hall of Famer by the name of Doug Green, who played here for the Burgundy Gold a number of years. Y'all sort of got together and came up with this and launched this program. If my memory serves me from some of the conversations we've had in the past.
Sure. Well, Ron, you have a good memory, and let me just talk about the origins of this whole thing for just a couple of minutes. The real genesis of this came out of a law called the Clean and Affordable Energy Act of 2008. What the city was realizing was that as we were expanding in terms of the number of residents who were living here, we needed to really get a hold of our energy use here in the city. As you know, we don't have any generating stations that generate electricity here in the city. We are dependent on generators in other states, and we bring all of that electricity in. And Councilmember Mary Che came up with this bill that said, look, rather than us spending our D.C. ratepayer dollars building up more building more generating stations and building more transmission lines, let's take a look at how we help our residents reduce the amount of money that they're spending on electricity by energy efficiency and by getting renewable energy that's generated right here in the city versus, you know, relying on energy that's generated outside of the city. Plus, you talk about when you're generating electricity in this region, you're burning coal, oil, or natural gas to generate that electricity. That's clearly greenhouse gas emissions that goes against the city's long-term climate goals, against the world's long-term climate goals. So Councilmember Che passed this bill called the Clean and Affordable Energy Act back in 2008, and it called for the creation of a D.C. sustainable energy utility that would really do about five or six different things. This was groundbreaking legislation in the country. No other state was trying to do something this complex. We were going to take on natural gas usage reduction, electricity reduction, create opportunities to install renewable energy, solar, here in the District of Columbia, as well as creating jobs for district residents and creating opportunities for local businesses to do all of this work, installing all of this new high-efficient equipment, installing these solar systems. So the act was passed in 2008, and the D.C. Sustainable Energy Utility got started in about 2011. You know, sometimes the wheels of government turn a little bit slowly. But we got cranking around 2011. And the solar part of this started in 2012. We really didn't do much in 2011 other than trying to get a few quick start programs going. But in 2012, we really got into offering programs for residents, small businesses, large businesses, in terms of energy efficiency. And on the solar side, I remember we were kind of late in the year. We were working on a fiscal year basis. We were late in the year in 2012, and we were like, oh, wait, we have to do something for solar. We hadn't done anything for solar yet. And so we got together, like you said, with folks like Mark Davis, Daryl Green, formerly of the Washington football team. That's what I'll call him right now. And we thought about what could we do to bring solar to various parties in the District of Columbia. And we took a look at a map of where all of the existing solar systems were at that time. Now, this is back in the late, well, you know, about February or March of 2012. What we found was that over in some of your wealthier areas, like Ward 3, Ward 4, a bit in Ward 6, and some in Ward 1 or 2, there were over 1,000 homes that had solar on them. Over 1,000. But we looked at Wards 5, 7, and 8. That's a third of the city. And there were less than 23 or 24 systems total in Wards 5, 7, and 8. So we started
now,
our work.
Listening on is, Ted, to sort of get a visual picture in their minds of what you're talking about. We're talking about our nation's capital, ladies and gentlemen, and we're talking about these areas, and these particular wards are basically, and still are today, African-American populated, heavily populated wards. On top of that, to add injury to insult, it's been the same wards that when you began to look at the statistical data, it showed that the residents and homeowners in those in lower income, some of those lower income areas in those wards, because the whole all the homeowners in those wards are not, of course, low-income residents. But the fact of the matter is disproportionately more low and moderate income people were carrying a heavier burden paying their utilities. If my memory serves me right, Ted, because I read the Omnibus Act of 2018 and testified in those hearings in October of that year. In both hearings, one was on the 8th and one was on the 29th. Matter of fact, I pulled out the actual witness list because I wanted to refresh my memory and just share with our listening audience how land-breaking this legislation that started off in 2008, fast forward 2023, now has $7 billion of U.S. taxpayers' dollars coming through the Inflation Reduction Act. But we're going to back it up, and we're going to talk about the history of this thing, because the pilot was started by the gentleman you're listening to on the other end of the mic, Mr.
Right. So part of the discussion, and you're absolutely right, was we looked at energy burden, clearly. And when you talk about energy burden, which falls much more heavily on lower-income residents than upper-income residents, let's say an individual gets an electric bill for $150 for the month. Well, if you're making $150,000, $200,000 a year, you hit click, you pay it, and you move forward. If your income is closer to maybe $40,000 or $50,000 a year, you might be sitting there with a bill like that, and some decisions have to be made. Are we gonna eat this month? Is there gonna be medicine? Are we gonna pay rent? Your energy bills in many homes are the second largest bill in the house after your rent or your mortgage. Oftentimes, the energy bill and the transportation bill, maybe you have a car, are your larger bills in the home. And so we were saying, you know, we can't do anything about somebody's rent, or we can't do anything about, you know, if they have a car or not. But that other bill, that energy bill, we could go and attack that. We were going in through energy efficiency and installing solar to reduce the energy burden for low-income residents. And so what we where we started doing this, and this wasn't just about energy burden exclusively, of course, as I mentioned earlier, we wanted to give local companies who were working here in the solar space, who were trying to get a foothold in this, we wanted to give them opportunities to do the installation work. We wanted to make sure that they hired and trained local residents to do this work as well, therefore creating jobs within our own communities. We wanted to make sure that, and this was critical, and this is where Darryl Green really helped us a lot in terms of hiring local people to go to the churches, to go to the, you know, the community centers, to spread the word, because we didn't have much of a marketing budget. We weren't running television commercials. We weren't running radio commercials. I should have called you to say, hey, can you help us get the word out in the community? But a lot of people were not aware of what solar really was. Did it work? And here we are with a brand new organization called the DC Sustainable Energy Utility. Nobody had ever heard of us. So you can imagine if we were coming around knocking on doors saying, you know, ma'am or sir, we'd love to give you this solar system absolutely free of charge to you. We're from this new group called the DC Sustainable Energy Utility. If you just let us into your house and up on your roof and let us into your panel box, we'll install this system. You can imagine how skeptical people were. Say, wait a minute, you're going to give me a solar system for free? If I just let you in my house, you're going to give me this for free. Thank you. Goodbye. You know,
I've
been rope-a-doped once or twice. I'm not falling for that one again.
Yeah, that's why I laughed, Ted, when you said that, because I can see people responding to that right now. You knocking on my door in Ward 5, 6, 7, and 8. Talking about you going to do something for me free, and I'm going to look at you real strange. But even further than that, Ted, I had the privilege of speaking one day with Miss Donna Cooper, who was dynamic leader for TEPCO here in Washington, D.C. And I was at a meeting, and Donna said, look, Ms. Bethay, she said, thank you for coming down to sort of cover what we're doing here with this renewable energy. And this particular meeting was on solar, and it was on rooftop solar as well as EV charging.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to all the stakeholders in the room as they were, like, really peppering her about situations. And she said, look, we've already done our due diligence. We know in Wards 5, 6, 7, and 8, the most of our homeowners are 55 years and older, and these people can't come out of pocket to even repair their roof. So if you wanted to abate what we would call the aggressive renewable portfolio standard legislation, how are we going to ever reach that if the people who own the property cannot afford to upgrade and do those repairs on those roofs, replace those old circuitry boards and that electrical infrastructure? Because when you come in to put a new PV system, this has to be done. Then you're talking to them about a program where there was no money in the advertising budget for anyone at that time, because that was one of my biggest pet peeves testifying back in front of the council in 2016 when they were working on pushing through the first renewable portfolio standard legislation, which was signed into law by Mayor Bowser in 2017, before 2018, Omnibus Act came into play. It's always been an issue about community education and outreach. So
yeah,
I can imagine.
Right.
You,
so Ron, let me, you raised, absolutely. Absolutely. You raise a very, very good point. So let me tell you what happened, okay, when we got started. And I'm going to get to this issue that you're talking about the roofs and everything, because it's critically important. So when we got started, because we'd really never done this before, I will truly admit we set a very, very modest goal of 28 homes that we were going to try to install solar systems on that year. And you say, well, why'd you choose the number 28? Of course, you know, we chose the number 28 because Darryl Green was working with us, and that was his number when he played with the Washington Redskins. That was his number. So the goal for the first year, 2012, was 28 homes, and I'm very proud to say we did over 50 homes in that first year. But we learned a lot of lessons as we were doing it too. One of those lessons that we learned was that as we went around knocking on these doors and getting a lot of doors shut in our face because we didn't have the community outreach part of this sewn up and done appropriately. So we'd go in, you know, those people who would accept us and say, okay, I'll take you up on your offer. We realized that you had to look at the roof first. You had to look at the panel box to make sure that all the electric circuitry was in place. And in most of your older homes in the District of Columbia, the conditions were not ideal or even suitable. Suitable to install this solar up on the roof because you had these older roofs. And clearly what you don't want to do is put a system on a roof and then get some snowfall and then the system sitting in somebody's living room. That makes for a very unhappy customer.
No question.
So
we
had to pick homes that were roughly 20 years or so old or newer. That significantly limited the types of homes where we could do these installations. And as we know, a lot of members in our community are living in homes that sometimes are bordering on about 100 years old.
Then after
our first, you know, couple of years of installations that I went to Councilmember Mary Che, because at the time when we were first doing this, we did not have money that we could allocate for roof repair. We didn't have money that was acceptable to spend on upgrading the panel boxes. These were safety measures that you clearly needed to take. And I call this the preservation of affordable housing. You know, when you're going in and doing these safety upgrades to make sure that, you know, the electrical system doesn't catch fire, to make sure the roof doesn't collapse. These are critical. These aren't optional, absolute necessities. And Councilmember Mary Che, to her credit, heard my testimony when I went and testified in front of her. She said, hey, tell me about the program. What's going right? What's going wrong? And I said, quite frankly, you know, the good thing is our community outreach was outstripped by the word of mouth, I would say glee in the community when people started to get these systems installed and they started to get their new utility bills and they saw that their electricity bill had been slashed by 50% or more. They'd go and tell their neighbors, hey, you know, I got this, you know, got the solar system on the house, and, you know, all of a sudden my electric bill dropped by half or more. Phones started ringing. People started calling. You know, they wanted a system as well. That was the best marketing outreach tool we possibly could have, was word of mouth. But then in addition to that, you had to look and say, okay, but you still had these older homes that we couldn't address. And so Mary Che allowed us to then start spending some of the money on roof repairs, on upgrades to panel boxes. These were kind of initiatives that took us a little while to stand up and get them fully in place. I'm very, very happy to say now that, you know, we've you know, been doing those sorts of upgrades and repairs for a good number of years. For some of the earlier years, we worked with the Department of Housing and Community Development. As they would go and repair roofs, we would go and put solar right behind them. It was a good partnership, but Housing and Community Development wasn't doing as many roofs a year as we really needed to tackle. By the time we got this program into its third year, we were doing over 100 roofs a year. Housing and Community Development probably was only doing a couple dozen roof repairs a year, so we really needed to, you know, expand beyond the partnership with them. Again, you know, you live, you learn, you experience these things, you grow. In about 2018, we then took on a big new adder to the program, which is the community solar portion of the program. And let me define community solar, because a lot of people may have heard the term before, but they really are not familiar with what a community solar project is. Think about a large parking garage or a school building or a warehouse where you could, where you've got a very, very large roof, and you could install a large solar system. But what you do with the energy is you don't pass that energy back into the school or to the warehouse. You feed that energy into Pepco's electric distribution network. And this is where Dr. Cooper, who you mentioned earlier, who was working, you know, former regional president of Pepco, this is where Dr. Cooper helped us out a whole lot. So you have to interconnect these systems with the Pepco distribution system. That allows Pepco to buy less energy from these generating stations, you know, that are way out in the hinterlands, and get more energy that's actually generated here in the District of Columbia, right here at home, clean energy. Those the credits from that energy are then given to subscribers to the systems, and people were able to get a subscription to the system, again, absolutely free of charge. All they had to do was sign up with paperwork with the Department of Energy and Environment, and a subscription to the systems would give them the equivalent of about 4.5 kilowatts of energy coming into their home. Let me break that down in just dollar terms instead of kilowatts. Cut your energy bill again by about half, or you know, maybe as much as 70%. You'd get a subscription. The subscription would be good for 15 years. And it's very easy to sign up. If you were income qualified, that's 80% of less or area median income. Once you got on a subscription, it was good for 15 years. And at this point, I'm happy to say we probably have north of 6,000 District of Columbia residents who have subscriptions to these community solar projects.
Well, Ted, I want to back you up a little bit because I want people to understand how this program has been impacted by federal legislation. And what I'm talking about, there was a 30% federal tax. There is a 30% federal tax credit if you decide to put a PV system on your roof. In the Inflation Reduction Act, which President Biden signed about 2.5 years ago, there is $357 billion. Mm-hmm. About $257 billion is in the form of tax credits. On a consumer-based level, when we begin to look at PV systems for a roof, you install a 30% federal tax credit that the homeowner can take advantage of to offright that cost of that system out over 2 or 3 years. The same if you buy a new electric vehicle, it's $7,500. If you were buying a used vehicle, in some states they have adopted legislation for $4,000. But what I want to talk about is something that you have mentioned, which is the what we say, 10,000-pound giant that's in the room, Ted. Washington, D.C. is very, very, very unique because of its density and population. But when we began to look at what we would call those energy credits, because of how the Omnibus Act of 2016 was written, saying that for energy generated for renewables, for wind, that the local utility could still go outside of the district and purchase those credits from energy generators who exist outside of the District of Columbia. The wind, the hydrogenetics, which is water, the same. But for mm-hmm. solar, it had to come from inside the physical landmass of the District of Columbia. And what this did, ladies and gentlemen, it created the most valuable, what we would call, REX market on planet Earth, where these energy credits are now trading for $365 a kilowatt hour. Could you explain to me how y'all dealt with that in 2011 in terms of looking at how those energy credits would be transferred over to those owners? Because as I looked at some of the original pilots and models, the DC Sustainable Utility and DOEE claimed those utilities for the first 5 years. After the fifth year, they transferred over to the homeowner. And I understand somewhere around 2018 that that got changed. But fast forward, looking at what we're working with today, we have a national problem. It's not a DC problem that started in DC. I think it's more reflected and reflective here in Washington, D.C., and it's a bigger deal in Washington, D.C., because, Ted, what y'all created was really helping a lot of low and moderate income residents. They were actually getting checks from the utility company from those systems, and some of those systems were no longer larger than what we call 5 kW systems. They weren't large systems, but they were able to knock some of those low and moderate income homeowners' utility bills completely out, and they were getting a credit or check. So could you sort of elaborate?
Right. Ron, you're asking a very, very complicated question, and let me try to simplify it, and I'll answer from the perspective of the sustainable energy utility and what we did.
Okay.
There are several different types of ownership models in terms of solar systems. Several. One is, let's say you're a resident who has the means to do so. You could absolutely buy, and this goes back to like 2010, 2011, when the city was sponsoring some of the solar programs. You could buy a solar system in your own right, and the city would send you some money to help you purchase the system. I was not involved in that. That was a program that existed before I started doing this work. But if you owned the system yourself and you had an outlay of your own cash, your resources, to buy the system, as you mentioned, there was a federal tax credit, which has gone up and down over the years, but I mean, you know, there's a federal tax credit of between 26%, 23%, and 30% of the purchase price of the system. And then there was what you call the solar renewable energy credits, the SRECs, that were available to the owners of the system that were paid to you on a quarterly basis. When we started building these systems for our low-income residents, we did not want to charge the residents a single dime. But we had to make sure then that the installers had to be made whole. So what we did was, you know, we took some of the money that we had at the DC Sustainable Energy Utility, and this is all money that's collected from, at the time, it was money that was collected from DC ratepayers. We took some of that money, and then we told the installers to say, look, the installer would, because the installer was putting out the cash for the system, not the resident. Remember, the residents did not pay for these systems that we were installing anyway. The installer would take that federal tax credit, and the installer would receive the SREC payments to make them whole for the cost of having installed the system. There are a myriad of different opinions about, was that the right way to approach it, wrong way, you know, could you have done it 5 other ways? Probably so. That's what we did. We heard arguments from many people who said you should transfer the solar renewable energy, the SRECs, to the homeowners after a time certain. You know, whatever number, 5 years or whatever. At the time, and you got to remember, we're dealing in 2014, 2015, the solar renewable energy credit market was very volatile. It wasn't as stable as it is today. When you mention how much RECs are selling for today, their market is, it's a market. It's gone through a lot of volatility. We put that risk on the installers rather than putting that risk on the residents. But that's how we handled it. I think there are others who have installed systems in this town with the support of the Department of Energy and Environment who have designed different economic models for paying for the systems, and I applaud them. Look, the bottom line is helping people reduce their energy burden, again, helping residents get jobs here in the community, helping local organizations, local companies get work right here in Washington, D.C. If we've accomplished those things, check, 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 I think our work is done. If we can, if there is a financial way to feasibly also give the residents who have the systems on their roof, give them those solar renewable credits and let them get the money from it, that's gravy on top of an already pretty good meal.
Well, I agree with you, Ted, on that point. What's been disturbing to me has been the type of pushback that's come from the big fossil fuel lobbies and the utilities as they have deactivated the data sharing option of over 20 million U.S. citizens and small businesses and churches that's put PV systems on their roof. Now, to the Public Service Commissioner's credit here in Washington, D.C., in the Office of People's Counsel led by the dynamic Mrs. Sandra Fry, y'all have been the only general counsel who partnered with the U.S. Attorney's Office and DOE to bring any type of litigation against the utility for deactivating or turning these meters off, which is a major problem. And I know that it's been one because I've gone to many public service commissions down at your offices and listened to D.C. residents over the years complain about this issue before it became a national issue. But now it is a national issue. So as we look where we are right now, Ted, with this Solar for All program having $17 billion in, how does this make you feel as the one who started this pilot? And I've got a caller that's online that may have a question for you because I know I scheduled you for about 30 minutes, and we've already crossed that, so I want to give my caller opportunity if he may have a question for you. But first, can you address that question I just put for you, and then we're going to hear from our caller here that's been holding for a minute.
Sure. And happy to take the questions from your caller. Quite frankly, I think, I share in the credit with a whole lot of really, really visionary people, and I think all of us are immensely proud of the work that we started well over a decade ago, not just the impact that it's had here in the District of Columbia, but clearly those looking around from a national perspective, quite frankly. We've had some of these conversations with entities outside of the United States of America. Delegations, the State Department would send delegations from Africa, from Asia, from Europe in to meet with me at the D.C. Sustainable Energy Utility to hear about what we were doing and to allow them to think about could they take this back to their communities abroad. So we're immensely proud of the work that we started so many years ago. And look, you don't have to be a believer in climate change. You don't have to be an environmentalist. A dollar is a dollar to all of us. And if we can help, number one, have our residents save some of those dollars so that they can spend that on things that are more beneficial in their lives and help us recirculate some of our dollars by utilizing local businesses who are paying taxes here versus businesses in Maryland and Virginia who are just taking our money out of here. you know, that's all to the good. So I, as I said, just immensely proud of the work that we've done.
Well,
and the impact we've been able to have. And you know, and we can quantify it in dollars. You can quantify it in terms of greenhouse gas reduction. You can talk about the health benefits, lowering of incidence of asthma because we have better air quality here in the city now. All types of benefits are derived from renewable energy as well as energy efficiency.
Well, I'm immensely proud of what y'all have been able to accomplish. And I've been a staunch advocate for this program for a long time, but I have the privilege of having Mr. Frank Coles on. Good morning, Mr. Coles.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good.
We're
how
doing
are you?
Great.
This
you hear me?
I have Mr. Ted Treville, who's now with. Serving on your public service commission here in Washington, D.C. But, Frank, you have a story yourself. You and your lovely wife, Trudy, y'all were one of the first people, not the first, but I think y'all came online in 2000, around 2018. So y'all were some of the people who came through under the community engagement program that Mrs. Anna Schulman, Neighborhoods United, was working through and working with the Solar for All program at that time. So you have any questions for the Commissioner Treville?
The only question I really have is how do we collect the how do we go about acquiring the credits that we have gotten from SREC? How do we apply for those? I guess is the question.
Okay, now that is a matter of, are you a community solar subscriber or do you have a single family system on your house?
A system on the house.
Okay. So now that is a matter. Do you know who the installing company was?
Solar Now and Forever, I think it was a company. Hold on.
Solar United. Who?
Solar United. Anya Schulman's group. Solar United.
Solar United
organization.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what, I think I heard Mr. Bethay say earlier that Ms. Schulman will be on with him starting at noon today, so that's only, you know, a few minutes from now. I would love it if you contacted, call back in, ask her directly, you know, how you get those credits. I clearly wasn't a part of, you know, that installation, so I wouldn't want to speak for her, but clearly, you know, when she comes on in about 20 minutes or so, you know, call back in. Let her know you want your credits.
Okay. Very good. So far, I've been very pleased, though, because the Solar for All has been very helpful to me economically.
So tell me what it's done for your
bills
in your house. What sort of reduction have you seen for your electric bill?
You need to get a battery.
I've gone from $300-$400 electric bills to $11 electric bills.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Wait a minute. Mr. Coles, would you please repeat that for our listening audience?
We've gone from $300-$400 a month electric bills to $11 a month electric bills. That's over the summer. And I imagine that's because we've had the heat and, you know, the sun
has been
very bright.
Very hot sometimes.
Yeah. Rod,
I hope everybody within the sound of your voice can understand the significant savings that can be derived. Like I said, you don't have to subscribe to any global warming theories or you don't have to be environmentalist. It's great if you are, but this is real money. This is real money.
Well, Ted, why I wanted you to come on, Ted, because I had the privilege of being on at the Public Service Commission back in January when the summit, and even and now that you are serving in the mayor, did a very, very wise move by appointing you to to the D.C. Public Service Commission, and I saw you cited for our African-American-owned minority certified CBEs in terms of how to break down some of those prime contractors to possibly work with some of those small African-American contractors. I want to give kudos to you publicly, brother, because you were the first one, and I've been going to the meetings for a minute, okay? But you're the first one struggling like that, and I really appreciate that because I know how hard it is for our companies to get these opportunities out here because that's what the National Association of Blacks in Solar, we work with all our African-American-based firms, and it is a very, very challenging field because people think, when you're talking about people doing an installation such as rooftop solar as their main core of business, it's not a whole bunch of actual install.
The capital, you've got to understand, the cash outlay for the company is significant. They have to put out between $12,000, $15,000, $16,000 in cash up front to get the system designed, installed, and interconnected with Pepco, okay, and all the labor and the cost of the panels and the inverters and everything. All that money goes out up front. Then they start getting money back on the rear end from either the city, the tax credits, and the SRECs, et cetera.
I don't want to cut you off, but don't they also have to take on the cost for the permitting and all that?
Yes. That's what I'm saying. They have to pay all that out of their pockets up front before they start getting a dime back from the city or the federal government in terms of the tax credits or anything else. So yes, it's a very capital intensive sort of an operation.
And we might be talking about a $30,000 system. So you're talking about hard cash out front that you got to put out and then get yours back over the life of the project, which might be 15, 25 years.
Right.
Okay. I just want people to understand why you don't see, because you can ride around the District of Columbia, especially over here in far northeast, if you're coming toward PG County, Outridge Road, and you'll see a whole slew of, you see some PV systems, but you don't see as many as you would think that you would be seeing with the value of the energy credits in the District of Columbia, because rooftops are gold in the district. We got a piece of property inside the city. There's no question about that.
Absolutely.
So with that being said, Ted, I mean, I've had you longer than I asked, but I really want to take time to thank you for taking time from your busy schedule to come on our platform today. And is there anything you would like to say in closing? Because little boy said, we're not the greedy, but we're the needy, so we need back again in the future. And I want to thank you for the work that you were able to do over at DCSEU with the energy utility sustainability and for those 11 years, because I think those formative lessons that y'all learned and how y'all sort of molded this program, and now it is a national, it was adopted by the Biden administration under the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, which has $27 billion in that. $7 billion of that is for the Solar for All program, and you have had 43 states and the District of Columbia for that funding, and it's going out the door as we speak. So I want people to understand that how important this pilot is that this gentleman we are speaking to started. Because Never lift up our African-American heroes and sheroes in the community, brother, and I can consider you a hero with the work you done put in. Because I know some of these stories and some of these nightmares y'all been in, because we've had some conversations, Ted. So I want to thank you.
Oh, Ron, you have to have me on. Please have me on for another hour on another day when we can talk about some of the stories, some of the, I call them lessons learned, you know. I'm the first to admit we made a mistake or two, and you know, as I always used to say back at the office, it's not a mistake until you leave it that way, so we had to go back and get some things straight. But let me say this in closing. After I first thank you for giving me this time, and thank your listeners for their engaged nature and everything and their interest in this topic, if you feel like you want to either have a solar system on your roof, or if you say you live in an apartment and you would want to have energy that's coming from one of these solar systems so that you can get a subscription, it's extremely easy to make these things happen. I'm going to give you a phone number. So everybody get out a pencil right now. I'm going to give you advance warning. Get out a pencil right now. I'm going to give you a phone number. You can call it up. Hit zero. A person will come on and speak to you and tell them you're interested in solar. Tell them, you know, where you live, be it in an apartment or in a, you know, single family home. Either way, you can take advantages of the clean energy programs that are offered here in the District of Columbia. And so the phone number is 202-879, that's 879-2222. Again, it's 202-879-2222. Call up, that's the DC Sustainable Energy Utility, call them up. They're good folks over there. Even though I'm not there anymore, they're still running these great programs that, you know, I helped start up over a decade ago. And again, this is all designed to help our residents here in the District of Columbia reduce their energy burden and help our local businesses here do business right here in this city. And the great thing is, Ron, you know, a lot of the local businesses who started doing this solar are now installing solar next door in Maryland. Some are working in Virginia. Some are working as far south as the Carolinas and down into Georgia. As you said, this program has grown and spread exponentially. And to allow our local companies now to get business outside of the District of Columbia and be able to expand their businesses, I believe is a win-win as well. So, again, I want to thank you for having me on today. Okay.
Yes, mm-hmm. sir. I know it's a win-win, man. I want to, like I said, I can't thank you enough, Ted. You will not be a stranger to this platform, Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. So with that being said, Ted, you have a blessed day. If you want to hold on, Mr. Coles, we're going to be joined shortly by Mrs. Anna Schulman, and you have a blessed day, Ted. Have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you, Rod. Have a wonderful day to you and your listeners.
Right,
bye-bye.
Yeah, well, ladies and gentlemen, you just heard the interview of Mr. Ted Trebue, who is the former managing director for the D.C. Sustainable Energy Utility here in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. He started the Solar for All program 11 years ago with NFL Hall of Famer Gerald Green of the Bird Union Gold, as well with Mr. Mark Davis over at WDC Solar, whose operation is still in Southeast near the Big Chair. He's now operating in his offices in Atlanta, Georgia's Urban Solar, and he's one of the founding members of the National Association, his company, of the National Association of Blacks in Solar, which I am the acting president. But with that being said, I'm going to sort of have this conversation with Mr. Cole since he's still on with me. Now, Frank, if my memory serves me well, this installation was done in 2018 when y'all got the PV system on your roof, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. So fast forward 2023, this will mark the 5th-year anniversary, and then in the contract that you have, as I remember, because my daughter was also within that same group with Neighborhoods United when they were handling the educational outreach component for DOEE, was that after the 5th year, those energy credits transfer over to the homeowner. So I know that y'all have been looking forward to that, and I guess this is one of the things that you'll be able to speak in the school, and then I'm looking for her to come in at any minute now. But could you sort of speak to some of the other issues that you had over the years with the system? Because you, at some pretty crazy bills and stuff going back and forth with Pepco, weren't you?
Yeah, you broke up on me.
I said, going back over the years since you put the system on your roof, before you things have sort of stabilized out now, but you were going back and forth with peaks and spikes in your electricity bill, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. It was going up and down for a minute. Again, since because of the climate change or whatever, and the long hot summer, I guess that's proved to be very beneficial in terms of generating enough power to compensate for the difference.
Okay, well, when you can make money, all you got to do is let the sun come up. I mean, that's not a hard job. You know what I mean? All you got to do is let the sun come up, and you can make money. And see, that is the whole essence of this thing. Now, to show you how big this is here in the DMV market area, is anybody paying attention to the press conference that was held at Dulles Airport yesterday?
No, I didn't.
Well, Dulles Airport is building the largest solar array in the country, in Loudoun County, which will generate 100 megawatts of power, which is enough power to generate and furnish energy for 30,000 homes at Dulles Airport, on their property at the airport. Now, they got battery storage for that, too. So you know what that means, don't you? When you go to Dulles, well, they don't get an electricity bill no more. The airport is completely being powered 100% by solar and energy. It is the largest commercial solar power plant to be built in the United States of America. They broke ground. They had the press conference yesterday, cut the ribbon on building this 100 megawatt solar power plant at Dulles Airport. So as we can see how things can be scaled, looking at that being a pilot, because it's the first thing. It came out of the representative's mouth, the sister who was the spokesperson for the airport authority, says, look, we're looking at O'Hara, we're looking at New York, we're looking at Los Angeles, we're looking at Atlanta. We hope that other airports around this country will follow this model. Once again, DMV market area. That's what I'm trying to get people to understand. These projects, when they are launched here in Washington, D.C., they are launched as national pilots. So it's not surprising to me. We are talking about this historical pilot program, because this is historical to have a program that started out with little ability, nothing, because they didn't have money. to pay for advertising on local radio. And today, for it to be funded through the Inflation Reduction Act to a tune of $7 billion is not a small thing. But this conversation ain't going to be held a whole bunch of places, especially when it's targeted to help low and moderate income folks. Now, I'm pleased to have just been joined by Mrs. Anna Schulman. Hello, Mrs. Schulman.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm great now. I got you on the airwaves. Well, welcome back. You haven't been
Thank
here
you.
Since 2017, so it's been a while since you've been on the track.
It's been a long spell, but I've been hearing about all the good work you've been doing in the meantime.
Well, Anna, let me thank you for taking time from your busy schedule. And I got some folks that you changed their life with your program, Neighborhoods United. It was then D.C. Sun, but you had a dynamic young lady who I know she's moved up in your organization by the name of Yesenia Riviera. And she
yes.
was running around the city with Corey and myself, standing in the cold over there on East Capitol Street in 15 degrees weather, trying to get the word out about the Solar for All program, and y'all did an excellent job. But I have Mr. Frank Coles and his lovely wife, Mrs. Trudy Seven. They are on the live line, and they were one of the participants in your program in 2018. So would y'all help say hello to each other? Frank?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Say again.
Say hello to Mrs. Schulman, and Mrs. Schulman, you can speak to Mr. Coles.
Hi, Mrs. Schulman. How are you? My pleasure. My pleasure. I have a little Yorkie that's big barking.
I hear him.
Yeah, tell him to be quiet. Be quiet, dude. Quiet. Go. He's a talker.
I'd love to hear about your experience going solar.
Share your experience because you were one of the ones who came through the program at the time when you were doing the educational outreach here in the District of Columbia, and y'all were doing an excellent job, and you had little or no advertising budget from DOEE to say that, because that's what I used to jump up and down with our former director of the agency over there, Tommy. But Anna, y'all got what you got accomplished was a little more than a miracle, because what you did with the lobbying effort on the with the local city council, with the mayor, with Capitol Hill, with the resources that I know y'all had y'all working with, I see that S on the back of you, on your chest. And on the back, your cape. So with that being said, Anna, please share with our listening audience, and I'm going to let Frank chime in and talk about his experience, how you started this with your son and how y'all have grown, because now you're in 11 states, the District of Columbia. I know you're in about 20 cities doing the same excellent work you started here in Washington, D.C. Could you sort of share that with our listening audience?
Sure. Oh, I'd love to. Thanks for the chance. So it started in 2007, and my son, Walter, was 12, and his best friend, Diego, and they'd gone and seen the movie Inconvenient Truth. And they were like, we've got to do something, and the government's never going to fix this. So, Mom, will you go solar? And I was like, oh, no. I have no idea how to do this. we tried, we called all these companies. No one was coming into D.C. The whole industry was out in the suburbs. We couldn't get any companies in. And so I thought I was kind of being slick and getting out of my promise. I said to the boys, we need a group. If you guys can organize a group of neighbors, we'll see what we can do. And they went to work, and they dropped flyers at every door in Mount Pleasant. And all of a sudden, we had 50 homes of all different kinds of people who wanted to go solar. And we started to work together. And basically, and then I'm going to speed up this story. You know, first of all, it wouldn't happen without two teenage boys going up and down all the steps. But it was a group process from the beginning. The mantra always was solar needs to be affordable and accessible to all, everybody in D.C. That was the principle that we started with. We passed the bill, mostly the kids passed the bill in 2008 that created an incentive program for D.C. We had to fix it in 2011. We went back in 2013. By this time, we had been organizing neighborhoods all over D.C. and passed the community solar bill, again, affordable and accessible to everyone. So community solar said you could put the building on the convention center and then share it, or you can put it on a church and share it. You don't need to have a roof. You could be a renter. And then finally, 2016, we passed the Solar for All bill. And we spent a lot of time implementing that first round, which is what you were talking about in the beginning, where Solar for All is a legislation in D.C. that requires every single low-income household, not house, but household in D.C., lowers their electric bill by half by 2030. And there's been a few bumps in the road since then. We at first were very much in the implementation, and now we're more like the watchdogs, if you want to know.
Well, Anna, I've watched a number of issues as the program has grown. And as it relates back to Mr. Coles, I remember when y'all signed up, I think around the first 78 people, in their original contracts, it says after the fifth year that the energy credits would be transferable over to those homeowners. And I know that was modified in the program, but wouldn't the city still be obligated to honor those contracts for those 78 people who had that in their original contract under the tutelage when your DC Sun executed those contract agreements?
If they went solar with us under our program, they should be getting those contracts after 5 years. So that was V17, 18, 19, 2021. They should be getting the address now, and if they're not, they should reach out to us so we can help them.
Okay. Well, that's where I wanted to go with this. Mr. Coles, you just heard that, correct?
Yeah, I did. And so who do I contact?
Helpdesk at solarunitedneighbors.org email. That's the easiest, because then we'll get it written down, get it straight, and we will help you get the SREC, because you should be getting the SREC income now, at least starting in 2023.
Yeah,
it's helped
this
us
is
their graduation.
At
solarunitedneighbors.org.
So,
right. Yeah, say one more time for me, please. I'm sorry.
Help desk, HELPDESK, just all together. Help desk at solarunitedneighbors.org.
Okay, so unitedneighbors.org, okay.
Yeah,
it's
you can also email me personally, Anya, A-N-Y-A, at solarunitedneighbors.org, and I'll pass it on so we can start helping people figure out how to get their SREC if that's not happening. I didn't know it wasn't happening. So I am really glad, Ron, that you got this conversation.
That's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you back on, because I have a plethora of people who signed up when I was running around trying to get people to come and sign up through the program through Neighborhoods United,
right.
And they're having that issue. So I will definitely pass the information on. So thank you very much for putting it out there like that, because people are very, very concerned. Some folks' meters have been deactivated, but that's a whole nother issue. I've had the privilege of having gentleman from Mission Data, who broke that article. What's his name? Michael. Michael has been on this show about four times, and the last time he was here, he sent me a copy of the letter that Senator Van Hollen and Senator Welch. Senator Van Hollen, who is my senator over here in Maryland, I'm a Prince George's County resident, and Senator Welch from Vermont sent a letter to the Secretary of Energy, Mrs. Grant Holmes, asking the Department of Energy if they would please hurry up and write some kind of legislative policy around this deactivation of over now 20 million folks who have put PV systems on their rooftops, and it's also undermining community solar also, which the Biden administration has just put $7.5 billion in that program. But Anna, I want to ask this question. How do you feel now that you see $7 billion being in a program that had it not been for your sons coming home saying, Mama, put solar on the roof, well, I don't think it would have ever blew up, because y'all did something. Y'all did the hard work. It's called, you did the public policy lobbying and the meetings, and I know what goes into that. So I want you to sort of respond to that. How do you feel about this being adopted through the Inflation Reduction Act?
Well, I got to say, it's like a little bit of a roller coaster feeling, because I'm so excited about the opportunity. And as you noticed, my organization, Solar United Neighbors, our son, we've grown. We're actually a national organization now. Like, our help desk is open to anyone in the country to get help going solar. And I feel like this money could go really well or really bad. And Ron, you know as well as anyone that we needed to stay on top of this money in D.C. Almost every year something went wrong, right? It's not like you just put the money there and it happens. But most recently, losing the bill.
I asked Mr. White, I said, Mr. White, who do I have to go see that's on the grassroots level that's driving public policy to help folks in D.C.? He said, man, you better go see Ms. Anna Schoolman, okay?
Right. So back to your question.
I've been in the rooms. I've been in the war rooms with Anna. I've been in the war rooms with her. So with that being said, how do we hold the Biden administration's feet to the fire? Because this thing, go ahead, Anna, please.
Okay, so first of all, D.C. is going to apply for $270 million of that $7 billion. Now, we don't know whether they're going to get it. They're just getting started. Their proposal's due in the middle of September, but there's a home piece to this, and they're open to people giving proposals and ideas, et cetera. So that's one piece. My organization is involved in helping 23 different proposals. And frankly, it's overwhelming, but we feel like we've been in the trenches. We know how hard this is. It's our responsibility to try to guide the money to being well spent. And we're really worried in a lot of places the money's going to end up just being given to the utility to do some, you know, greenwashing campaign or something. And
to reinforce your statement, the Justice Party Initiative, a young lady with the Green for All Action Group, the public policy analyst, she said, look, let me make something real clear about this Justice Party, which ties back into this Solar for All piece. She said, out of 50 states, only 4 state legislatures have introduced legislation and have passed the legislation to the state legislature to make Justice 40 legally binding. Now, this is for our listening audience. Unless the state legislature passes 40 initiative so that the U.S. attorney's offices in those counties say you have organizations that are applying for this funding and they're not getting the funding, but they're the ones that, based on the data, show has the greatest need and needs the benefit, those U.S. attorney's offices can bring legal litigation if it's passed by the state legislature. But if the state legislature didn't pass that, then the governor can do whatever they want to do with the money. And I understand your concern, Adam, because it's something ties, me being African-American, I'm from South Carolina, something called states' rights, okay? Yeah. And it ties right back to what you're saying right now about how this money is going to be spent. I just wanted to interject that and to reinforce what you're saying. Go right ahead, Adam.
Yeah, so... There's some states, what's interesting is there's some states, I'll give you an example, Florida, the state didn't even apply for the money. They left the money on the table. And they're not the only one. And so, but what's really exciting is 46 different municipalities in the state of Florida and my organization and a community credit union and a bunch of other nonprofits have all gotten together, and they're doing their own proposal. So I'm seeing really serious, great proposals coming out of this process. And some of the people that are going to be evaluating the proposals learned in D.C., and they know what's real and what's not real. So I hope that I know that they're not all going to be great, but I'm really still really hopeful that most of this money is really going to go help people that need it the most.
But
I'm so
what type of funding is in that deal?
All years, I'm not hopeless, but I'm still hopeful.
Yeah, well, but what I'm saying, this is where the buck stops with me. Because I jumped through the hoops, and I've gotten the National Association of Blacks in Solar. We have our 501c3 letter of determination. Yeah, well, we're just another 501c3.
Yeah.
The bottom line is, for people who have done the work in the trenches, such as Neighborhoods United, is there anything in any of these bills to help stabilize your organization so y'all can continue the great work that you're doing?
I don't know. I mean, it might just kill us. It might just kill us. I mean, it's right now we're just working for free, right? It's just so much work. It's such a short amount of time that we're just donating the time because it's $7 billion on the table that need to get spent well, right? I'd love to hear.
Community engagement funding, this is why I can't get in my head, Anna, I don't see any money targeted for African-American-owned media, whether it be print, it be digital, whether it be radio, whatever. Last time I was on a Zoom call with the representative from the Department of Energy and DOE here, DOEE, which is the Department of Energy and Environment here in our nation's capital, I raised that question. How much money do you have in your advertising budget? And I asked the person for DOEE for marketing and advertising the Solar for All program. He said $50,000. I said, man, that ain't nothing. A car cost, a Volkswagen costs $50,000. I mean, get this right. You got the
Green
Bank
of
Washington
proposal for $270 million, so you better go back to them and remind them.
I'm talking about the Green Bank of Washington, D.C. has been capitalized at $256 million. They got over $100 million set down there now, Anna. Can we talk about the Green Bank of Washington?
I don't know anything about the Green Bank of Washington. I'm just still waiting to hear. I don't know what they're doing. Do you?
No, I don't know, but I know that Tommy Wells has moved on. He is an African-American gentleman that's now the new director. But I know that they have a sizable amount of funding for projects in Washington, D.C., and I would like to see more around workforce development and community outreach and education around rooftop solar and putting a residential PACE in the District of Columbia to help more residents. But that's a whole nother discussion. But let's get back to Neighborhoods United. Anna, you're in 11 states now. How many cities are you in now, in those 11 states other than the District of Columbia?
We're in about 30 cities, I guess.
You're in 30 cities,
yeah.
11 states, and in those 11 states, you're in 30 cities. That takes
a whole lot of money,
coordination. And I just want people to understand that this is a 501c3 organization. They are not the greedy. They are the needy. Please go to Neighborhoods United and click on the donation button. Okay?
I want to make sure we don't ignore Fred. It's Fred, right? The homeowner?
Frank Coles. Well, yeah, Frank's gonna come
right back
in because I asked him to come for the duration because he saw the call came in on with Mr. Trey View. I had the privilege of having him on at the top of the hour. Then I got the icing on the cake with you being on the second top of my hour because I normally do a 1 hour show, but I wanted to make sure today that I was able to give you enough time to talk about how you have been able to grow this organization. Now, you are still have offices here in Washington, D.C. You have a national helpline for people that they can call in from all over the country. And if they need questions about solar, y'all there for them. So
we are. Our office is right at DuPont Circle.
Okay, so you're still located right off the circle. I remember where you had your office.
Yeah.
You're still located in the same location?
Yep.
Could you give that address for our listening audience, Anna?
Sure. It's 1350 Connecticut Avenue. And it's fourth floor. We are right over the Krispy Kreme, just south of DuPont Circle.
Okay. Well, you're located there. Now, you're doing a lot with community solar, but Frank, do you have any more questions for Mrs. Schulman specifically?
Not right now. I'm still kind of wrapping my head around the whole process myself. So.
Okay.
I'm sure I have a lot of questions. I just have not formulated them yet. I guess this question is the answer.
Okay. Well, you're welcome to stay on. You're welcome to stay on the live line, my brother. No problem. But man, I got
here.
Some other questions. I've got some other questions for you. Now, you have been able to grow this company, but tell me about the experience with producing the documentary Solar for All. How did that come about? Because I think that that had a lot to do with a whole lot of things around this adoption of this program to go national. What do you say about that?
You know, it was actually the hard one was passing the community solar bill in D.C. in 2013.
Okay.
Because the community solar bill is what enables shared solar or an apartment dweller or a renter to get solar. So it's really, you've got to have that available to be able to do Solar for All. And that site, we were really involved in. It was more than 2 years. And one of the things we did, and it was 2011, is most of your viewers might know John Capozzi, who's a DC activist. He was a shareholder of Petco at the time, and he's like, I think we should make a shareholder resolution. And so we did a demonstration in front of their shareholder meeting downtown, and we did a shareholder resolution. We had pro bono lawyers helping us, and I don't even remember what it said, but they didn't want it. So we got a meeting with the head of Petco, and we said, and he said, what do you really want? And we said, we want community solar in D.C., and this is the deal. You don't have to support it, but you have to have a good faith negotiation with us and no sneaking around the council building the night before the vote, telling them, you know, the sky is falling, they shouldn't vote for the bill. We want a good faith effort. And he said yes. And that's what we did. It was 2 years. It was all these volunteers, and we brought in a lot of people from the low-income housing community, like nonprofits, like National Housing Trust, who owns buildings all over D.C. for low-income. We had a working group, and we passed that bill. And it was heavy lift. It was a lot of work. And I would say there are 500 people across D.C. that carried one of those bricks. And once that was in place, that bill allowed Solar for All to happen. And honestly, Mary Chain was the leader of that effort. The Solar for All, we had this big bunch of fines. Petco pays a fine if they don't meet the solar standards. And that money was piling up, and it wasn't being well spent. And what Solar for All said is all that money goes to low-income solar. And it passed unanimously, I believe, 2016. So that was like the idea, and the idea that you could do it comprehensively, like every single family, was really transformational. We were really the first ones to do it. And I have to tell you the postscript to the story since you gave me the mic. 2021, you know, we've been working, as you stated, we were trying to do single family, we're doing multifamily, all these churches, et cetera. I think there's now 371 community solar sites in D.C. And we found out in 2021 that Petco was losing the credits from these facilities. In other words, it was getting built. It was getting paid for with the program. People were subscribing, and they weren't getting the discounts on their bill. And we worked with Office of People's Counsel and DOEE and got the Attorney General's office when Carl Racine was still there to file a petition. And he said, this is a travesty. Petco is overcharging 6,800 of the lowest income households in D.C. by losing the credit for this proposal. And
wait a minute, Anna. Wait a minute, Anna. I'm telling you the truth.
What?
I hope they're listening very carefully, because this is history making in itself, because I was aware of the work that y'all were doing behind the scenes, because because Yacina had so many jobs, I didn't know how many hats she had, but we would always talk. So I understood the work that was going on behind the scenes, but I want people to understand the sacrifice that this woman and her organization has made to make these programs happen in the District of Columbia. And these programs have now been adopted under EPA through the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Act, and it has $7 billion in it. So what I'm saying, Anna, the next time I talk to you, and I heard all you said about you working with all these groups and y'all got proposals in, but I sure hope that HELL, that y'all are successful in getting the funding that y'all need to support the effort that it is necessary, because it takes a lot of heavy lifting when you are working for poor and grassroots folk. It just because they don't have the resources a lot of times to advocate for their own self. So when you come into that space, they expect the people who come into that space to have the resources to bring it home. Am I making any sense to you, Anna?
Yeah, I really appreciate it. It's really nice. I really, thank you. That's all I have to say. Thank you. Yeah.
Because
we're not even funded in D.C. right now. We just do it out of stubbornness because I'm like, we came so far, we're not letting this go. It's like right now, the Public Service Commission has found that PEPCO owes low-income households in D.C. tax credits of nearly $1 million.
Say that
and
again.
Saying, it was just a filing error. It never ends. Like, you never can say you won. It's just you get to the next rock in the path, right? And you got to keep going.
Can you say that again? They owe ratepayers how much money?
$900,000, I think, is the number that the D.C. Public Service Commission said PEPCO owes low-income subscribers to the Solar for All program.
And that didn't include homeowners, small businesses, and churches who've had their meters activated.
That just
dealt with the people who live in apartment dwellings.
Yep.
So I want people to understand that this is not just happening here in Washington, D.C., but it's happening nationally. And being that you're national, when you are working in the what you would call regulated markets or rural states or red states, and you don't have the legislation in place where 92% of the energy, electricity that goes to low and poor income folks in those rural communities come from rural co-ops, what have been some of your challenges in those market demographics, man?
Oh, my God. I mean, well, I have to correct myself. It was 800,000, not 900,000. And there were some great stories in the D.C.ist about that, about the community solar recently. But, in rural, we're in Ohio. You would not believe, Ron, in Ohio, the utility has been convicted on federal RICO charges, racketeering charges, for giving
Ms.
money.
Salem, did you hear about your home state, Ohio?
Ohio. They basically bought the Speaker of the House, and then they passed a bill giving themselves a multi-billion dollar bailout for their non-competitive coal and nuclear plants. Billions of dollars.
Only here on the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Ladies and gentlemen, Mrs. School is not making this up.
You can't make it up. Yeah, it's crazy. In Florida, the utility there, we were fighting for net metering, right, which we have in D.C., which means you get a fair credit for any extra energy you make with your solar, right? It goes on to your neighbor's house, and the utility reduces your bill by the amount that you give them. Fair enough, right? So they didn't like that. So they targeted two legislators in the last election in Florida. I can't remember their names. They were both Latino. And they, what they did is they got two Republicans to run with the same last name, like Sanchez or Rodriguez. I honestly can't remember, to confuse voters. And they lost the election, those candidates, because the utility ran fake shadow candidates in Florida because those people were opposing their handouts and giveaways.
Dirty tricks.
Is dirty tricks. So one of the things we're doing is we're working on bills. There was just three passed, one in Maine, one in Connecticut, and one in Colorado. We're going to do a webinar in a month or so, basically making it illegal for utilities to use our money, ratepayer money, for politics, lobbying, trade association bills, dark money, dirty money.
Anna, could you speak a little more directly into your phone? You're sort of breaking up. Go right ahead.
So we're running a model bill to ban utilities from using ratepayer money, that means your money, my money, to lobby against us or to do politics against us.
Well, I know based on a suit that some young people just bought out in Montana, they just won a landmark case. A youth advocacy group. They won that case against Exelon concerning the being able to breathe clean air and get drink fresh, clean water. But when we begin to look, Anna, at the investment of $2.3 billion by the North Korean manufacturing company Qcell, which is building a manufacturing solar facility in Dalton, Georgia. When we look into Chester, South Carolina, you have Albemarle Corporation that's spending $1.3 billion to build a lithium manufacturing facility in Chester County. And you have Ford Motor Company that has signed a $500 million contract with Albemarle. Should organizations such as Neighborhoods United and other groups come together to go to these corporations that's building the manufacturing, since we are advocating for the installation and installing of solar systems around this country, as and the consumers as the end user, to help underwrite some of the cost of supporting the community engagement piece? What's your feeling about that idea, Anna?
That's really interesting. It's a really great idea. I've heard of, in other sectors, like I think now hospitals are supposed to make investments in the community for health as opposed to just dealing with sickness. And I love the idea that there should be some sort of community investment along with the business. Yeah, it's a really great idea, Ron.
Well, Anna, on yesterday, a historic announcement was made at Dulles Airport. I don't know if you was there, but Dulles Airport is building the largest solar power plant array at a U.S. airport in the U.S. It's going to put out 100 megawatts of energy. how do you feel about these type of projects, and how should these projects also, because they're saying this is going to generate enough energy to supply energy 30,000 homes in Northern Virginia. So how do we sort of tap into those type of things? Because I feel the work that your organization are doing around the country nationally, when these large commercial projects are being built, there should be some type of inclusion for those low and moderate income communities through some of the programs that y'all engagement and education. There should be some type of way that your organizations can plug in from and benefit from these projects being built, rather than just the commercial and the developer benefiting from this, when it's all said and done, it's gonna all be passed back on to us as consumers, even though they're not paying for the electricity anymore out there at Dallas Airport. We're still paying to support that process going through project being put there by the federal government with that support. So what's your feelings on those type of projects?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, I get much more excited about projects that are owned by members of the community and that our local businesses can work on and benefit from, and that address equity, not just energy. So that being said, I think one of the things we're starting to see is either programs that have a carve-out for community or low-income, right? So like the community solar program in Maryland, I think it's 5% or 10% has to be for local people and people who are under-resourced in those communities. The other thing that's new is these big solar things, which is just another giant business, and most of them are owned by utilities, they're having a trouble finding sites. And there's a lot of organized pushback about the sites. And the response is a little bit like what you were talking about before. Go in first and create benefits to the community, job training program, sharing some of the electricity, payments to farmers, et cetera, to make the community support the siting of a plant rather than oppose it. And so I think it's not my specialty, but a lot of people keep trying to drag me into that fight. And I think there's a lot of room for a lot of innovation and work there, because this IRA is prompting a lot of stuff to get built, and we need to be ready, you know, to make sure that the benefits are as broad as possible.
Well, Anna, I've had you for almost 45 minutes, and I always give the same credence. I asked for 30 minutes, and I stole another 13. But it's been truly a pleasure having you on the airwaves of this platform today, Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Thank you for your information.
Yeah, it was great to meet you. Definitely reach out so we can help with the SREC issue, all right?
Absolutely.
And what we'll do is once we figure out what's going on with you, we'll try to email everybody that did it with us with that contract, so everybody can get an email saying this is what you should do about your SRECs.
Excellent.
It's just a lot of people will have lost, you know, they'll have changed emails and we won't know how to reach them. So that's the challenge. So definitely reach out. And Ron, always a pleasure talking to you. I love talking to you. And I really, really appreciate the opportunity to get on your show again.
Well, Alan, you know, you can't come on here every 5 years. I gotta have you on more on a more consistent basis. So, with that being said, I appreciate you what you do and what you continue to do, because y'all putting in the work. And I already know that.
You are too. Everybody's got to do their part. So that's the way it works.
So I want to thank you for taking time from your very, very busy schedule to be a guest on this program today, Solar Now in the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. I want to thank you, Mr. Coles, for taking time to call in and be supportive of the show. Without that being said, you both have a very nice day.
Take care.
Very good.
Thank you. Bye.
All right.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to a very, very unique show today here on Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. I'm Ron DeFay. I'm the host of this show. We bring you this show what? Every week, this show is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC. For this show. If there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American and renewable energy companies to address the economic effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and underemployment of young African and African-American men and women locally and nationally and throughout the diaspora. Also to educate African and African-American communities locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. Ladies and gentlemen, you also know that this show is brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. You can get more information about that initiative by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Go over to GoFundMe. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, we're not the greedy. We just happen to be the needy in that category when we began to try to underwrite the cost and time and investment that I have to put in to bring this show to you every week over the World Wide Web, over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are streaming Twitter and Link. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be going on to another format called ION in the very near future, and we will be YouTubing this same podcast or radio format to keep educating our community around this issue of climate change, renewable energy, and the economics and its impact on Black America. Because believe me, we are already in the mix. We are already affected by climate change. I have today a crew just finishing up installing a new roof on my July 28th. Many people don't remember that date, but it was 103 in Baltimore. We had a thunderstorm that came in, almost took the roof off my house. And I'm still, like many homeowners, struggling with my homeowner's insurance company because they don't want to pay a dime. So with that being said, we're going to reach out to the proper channels with our state insurance office, and we're going to do the things that are necessary and follow and connect the dots to make sure we can hopefully recoup some of the costs that we have to come out of our pockets with to put a roof on our property. Because by law, we are required, if you got a mortgage, to have homeowners insurance. So that's what it's supposed to be for. So when an inspector comes and he tells me he can't see the new damage when Ray Charles, Sam Cooke, and Stevie Wonder can see it. I have a problem with that, but I regress. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, till next week, I don't want you to meet us here on this platform. I want you to beat us back here on this platform. And also remember that this program is brought to you every week by what? The National Association of Blacks and Solar, which is a 501c3 registered nonprofit with a letter of determination from IRS. Also are the needy and not the greedy. And we'll be getting our website back up. I'm the acting president, yours truly, Ron Bethea. I wear a lot of different hats, as you can gather here, listening to this broadcast today. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule and chiming in and listening to this podcast, Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact. Until next week, we're going to ask you to meet us back here if you don't meet us back here. And as we always say in closing, please go in peace as we close another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song. Singing.
Why don't you
sing it?